somewhat aware of what's better and not. But
yeah,
you can be eating all of the right things, but too much for what your body needs.
Yeah.
It's also going to end up leading to increased fats. Don't overcomplicate things. It is actually quite simple. You need to eat food. You need to be active. You need to manage your stress.
Yeah.
You need to try and get enough sleep. Because a healthy body composition is one that has less fat percentage. Mm-hmm. If you are just fixating on a scale,
mm-hmm.
you are going to get very frustrated. So when we refer to gut health, we talk about like our gut as running from the top all the way down to the bottom.
Mm.
Like your esophagus, stomach, intestines, colon, all of that.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like its own ecosystem. A diet's never going to be sustainable if you're told what you must eat on Monday. And then, because you're just being good at following instructions.
Mm.
And then people think, oh, I have no willpower. It's unrealistic expectation.
Hello, welcome to Navigating the 20s. You are with me, Zinhle Novazi. In this episode, I engage in a captivating conversation with Rosie Lombard, a distinguished dietitian, sports scientist, co-founder of Nutrition House, and an endurance sports athlete. In this insightful episode, Rosie shares her expertise on the significance of incorporating all essential macronutrients into your diet and the art of portion control. She delves into why restrictive dieting is not a sustainable approach and provides valuable advice on fueling your body for endurance training. As a multifaceted individual, Rosie shares her personal journey of juggling roles, such as being a wife, entrepreneur, and an endurance athlete. Her story is not only inspiring, but it also offers practical tips on how to balance and thrive in various aspects of life. Tune in to episode 8 for a dynamic conversation that combines nutrition wisdom, fitness advice, and life balance insights, leaving you equipped to navigate your 20s with a holistic approach to well-being.
Hi, Rosie.
Hello, Zinhle. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you.
It's so nice to have you on Navigating the 20s. To be very honest with you and our audience, I wanted to invite you on this podcast because I think you play such a fundamental role in my own personal journey and understanding diet and nutrition and like living a holistically full life. And so I wanted to share that with some of the other people in our communities who are in their 20s that are also struggling with diet, work-life balance, and everything that's in the mix. So for people that aren't familiar with who Rosie Lombard is, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, how you found your way to becoming a dietitian and eventually becoming an entrepreneur and like supporting your own practice?
Yeah, so I probably my whole life, I think, have been somewhat interested in nutrition, but I don't think I was fully aware of it. At school, I just played a lot of sport, and into varsity, I also played sport. But when I went to varsity, I don't think I had a clue what I actually wanted to do. So I ended up doing sports science first.
Sure.
And there, I wasn't really sure like what I was going to do with sports science. And then one of my best friends, who's also a dietitian, was doing dietetics. She was a bit ahead of me. And I just started learning more and more about what it actually entailed. Because I don't actually think I knew there was a course on dietetics or that you could do that.
Yeah.
And then I just went that direction, and it really was something I was passionate about in not just like one area. Loved the sports side, still involved in the sports side, but also I think just seeing how much you could impact someone's life and help them.
Yeah.
Because there was a part of me that also wanted to do medicine, but I knew that would be like a very long journey in that direction. And then I found this way of how I could still be involved in like a medical physiology type of thing. Yeah. And I studied that at UCT after being in Stellenbosch. And I moved to Joburg for my community service year, and I haven't left.
Sure.
It's my 7th year in Joburg.
Wow.
So then after community service, I went to work for a private practice, learned a lot there, and eventually decided to take the leap and start my own practice. And that was just over 2 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's been really great. What I like about dietetics is it's not just one thing. A lot of people think it is just diet, 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 and it's not at all. There are a lot of dietary aspects, obviously, but I also work with the Lions rugby team. So I'm still very much in the sports side and more, I suppose, the clinical. So it's nice because it doesn't feel like it's the same thing every day.
Exactly. And I think actually your unique proposition, which I, with previous dietitians, didn't have. I couldn't have somebody who really understood that, like, I was very sporty. So if I would speak about, like, I'm doing lots of CrossFit or a lot of running, they couldn't advise from a nutritional aspect, like, or they could, but they couldn't relate to it. So, like, it's nice to have somebody who's athletic, also understands the sports science of it and the dietetic side of things. Have you found that, like, that duality, the fact that you've got so many, like, different skills, does that feed into making you a better dietitian or more, like, holistic?
I think probably more holistic. Like, there's a lot of good dietitians out there. I think it just helps me probably advise better and give more practical understanding. Or maybe because I understand the physiology of maybe sports science, I can tie it into how one fuels for that.
Yeah.
And I think explaining it to people makes it easier if I know that knowledge. Because then if the patient or client understands it, they're also so much more likely to buy into it and, like, know what they're doing. They're not just being told follow X, Y, Z.
Exactly.
If you actually know what you're doing and why you're doing it, you're more likely to make it a normal thing.
Yeah, that's so true. Because actually, even in your methodology, what I find is when you're explaining, like, why I need to have, like, full, you know, you need to have carbs, you need to have a protein. So I think that's really great because you empower the person at the end of the day to be able to take charge of their own health. So, like, if you had advice for people in their 20s that are struggling to live a more balanced lifestyle, what are some of the basic key things that we can apply for everyday life?
So it's complicated, I feel like, these days for anyone that has social media. But specifically, I think, like, coming out of school, going into varsity, starting, like, your first job. Yeah. Now you're all of a sudden getting an income, like, there's social life, there's all sorts of things. Yeah. I think the biggest thing I can actually tell you is just to not overcomplicate things, because there is so much information out there. And remember, anyone can say anything and people aren't sure if it's from a credible source.
Yeah.
So don't overcomplicate things. It is actually quite simple. You need to eat food. You need to be active. You need to manage your stress.
Yeah.
You need to try and get enough sleep. Like, those are sort of my four fundamentals I try and get people to understand is it's not just about diet. You can't just go full tilt into diet and not care about moving your body, managing your stress, getting enough good quality sleep. And, like, if I went into the diet aspect, we actually need carbs, proteins, and fats and enough vegetables.
Yeah.
If that's all you do is try and eat your balanced amounts of carbs, proteins, and veggies, healthy fats, drink enough water, it's actually that simple.
Yeah.
Obviously, I would tailor things specifically for the individual sitting in front of me, but like, it makes me incredibly happy to know that I've empowered you, because if I can teach you and give you the knowledge and the tools at the end of the day to never see me again, except for wonderful things like this, but like that you don't need to see me all the time, you have the tools to make better choices when you are ordering food, when you are buying your groceries, when you are putting a meal together. Because that's the only way it is going to last.
Yeah.
Because if I dictate to Zinhle, you need to have this on a Monday, and then because you ate this on Monday, you must have this for afternoon lunch. Like, that's why diets fail. It's never going to work. It's not real life.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the teaching is really important to me because I think that does have a long-lasting impact. That's not only good for you. It's good for your mom. It's good for family, friends, everyone.
Everyone benefits. I like how you say that, like, the principle around looking at how much sleep are you getting, how much movement you're getting, and food, as opposed to, I think social media is always like, fast from this time to this time, don't eat this restrictive diet. And so people feel that you can't maintain. And the more you restrict certain food groups, the more unsustainable it is. And if, for other people that, let's say, are more athletic that want to come see you, like, if I use myself as an example, when I came to see you, I wanted to reduce the amount of body fat and make my body very efficient. If you can go through my scenario at a high level, high touch, what was the kind of advice that you gave me? in my specific scenario.
So I think, yeah, you were working very much in like the corporate world where that's a huge part of it, that the initial consult I have with a person goes into all of that. We do touch on, obviously, like what do you eat on a daily basis? That is a big portion of it. But what your life entails on a daily basis, like what time are you at work?
Yeah.
When do you get breaks? How is your sleep quality? That was quite important for us because we knew you were traveling a lot. You were all over.
Yeah.
You were never, you had clients all the time. You couldn't just go to work, eat your breakfast, like, and every day wasn't the same.
Yeah.
So it was important to understand that first, like what a day in Zintle's life looked like, number one. And then activity level, like how much were you doing? That played obviously a big role. And then we went into what you typically currently eat on a daily basis. And I could sort of see if you were maybe like not eating a good quality breakfast, inevitably lunch would end up being whatever you could find because you were so hungry because you didn't refuel properly after your morning CrossFit or after going for a run.
Yeah.
So, yeah, in that session, that first session was initially figuring out like where are there potentially barriers that are stopping you from being more successful and how were we going to manage that, get around it, improve things without really changing your life hugely and making it feel like from Monday.
Yeah.
I'm starting a diet and I need to go and do this 3,000 rand grocery shop and change everything. It's using what you already have, but just improving it.
I loved, that was for me also like what I found with your practice was phenomenal because you asked me, where do you shop regularly? And then when I said like Woolworths, then you were able to say, okay, and then what do you like eating? What don't you like eating? So it wasn't like I was forced to now start shopping, let's say at Spar or something I was not familiar with, or like start introducing new food groups that I was not necessarily like comfortable eating. And I think a big thing, I think you also switched my perspective around red meat. I used to eat red meat all the time. And now like I'm like 90% chicken, like a combination of chicken and fish. So that's also like a different complete mindset in terms of seeing how does red meat impact your body. It makes me feel a lot more heavier, but obviously it's not always the same for other people.
I think in our, like in South Africa, in our society here, red meat is a huge part of our lives. Everything revolves around red meat and a brine. Every meal, the focus is like, let's start with red meat. And I mean, certain people can metabolize it differently, but the reality of it is that red meat is higher in fat and it is higher in the less healthy saturated fats. And saturated fats are more pro-inflammatory. Those are the ones that can contribute to your cholesterol levels being higher. So you would feel heavier and more lethargic after eating those things because it just does take the body longer to process as well. And the sort of recommendation is that none of us should be eating red meat more than like 2 to 4 times in a week. But most people will have it 3 times at dinner. Then this weekend, they'll braai on Saturday and on Sunday. So it's a lot. So what I try and encourage people to do is maybe in the week, limit it to once a week because you know this weekend there's rugby, we're going to braai, or we're going to friends' house and socializing, and that we know 90% of the time is going to be red meat. So if in the week you could do fish, you could do chicken, you could do a vegetarian meal with beans or lentils, chickpeas, and manage it like that, you'll probably feel so much better for it. Because nothing is, like for you also, I never said there was anything you weren't allowed to eat.
Exactly.
There is no right or wrong food or good or bad food. And I think that's why people are so scared of making the wrong choice because they, we've been told diet culture is like ingrained that in our brain that you're either on a diet or you're not. You're either being good or bad. You're either eating the right thing or the wrong thing. And there is no wrong. We don't need to eat sweets and chocolates every day. We don't need to live off red meat every day.
But
it's okay if sometimes those things were in your life.
Exactly.
Especially when it's sort of sandwiched or like made part of a very healthy way of eating 70 to 80% of the time.
And how important is portion control? Because sometimes you eat healthy stuff, but you eat too much. So I think I always took it for granted that like, oh, so it's healthy, so I can eat as much of it as I want.
very important. And that's probably a lot of the time what I see. People come in, they're so frustrated. They tell me like what they're eating.
Yeah.
And it is good quality food. They're making better choices because they are somewhat aware of what's better and not. But you can be eating all of the right things, but too much of it. And again, there I said like right foods.
Yeah.
But you can be eating all of the better foods, but too much for what your body needs.
Yeah.
It's also going to end up leading to increased fats, even if it is the healthy stuff.
Yeah.
I'm all for eating as much veggies and salad and that sort of thing as you want, because that's very high fiber, water, vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, all of the stuff that we want for health.
Yeah.
But the other stuff, even if it is a chicken breast and it is brown rice, very healthy for you, but you need to be aware of your specific portions for you, not maybe what mom or partner or brother or sister is eating. It's specific for you.
That's so, so important. And also, you are, I guess, an endurance runner. You did like comrades. You've done a relay. I think it was from Johannesburg to Cape Town, if I'm not mistaken.
You ran there, yes.
You need to tell us about that experience. But also, I think once you've taken us through those two experiences, can you also give advice to people in our community that are also endurance athletes? Maybe some people are training for the Sanlam Marathon coming up. Mm. How would you advise in terms of diet, just on a high touch level, more general in terms of recovery and pre-race? Like, what do you need to eat before a big race? What should you be eating during the race and perhaps afterwards to aid in recovery?
So this is something that a lot of people struggle with. Mm-hmm. And I think only when they start doing a bit longer things and training a bit more during the week do they all of a sudden realize, so tired the whole time and like hangry the whole time. Then they start investigating like, what could I potentially be improving? And it's actually one of the biggest pieces of the puzzle that should be happening from early on, because just like you preparing for a marathon or for an Ironman or whatever it is, you are training and following a training program to get you there. You're training your legs, your muscles, everything.
Yeah.
So we should be training our gut as well to metabolize food and use food as fuel during that activity. But what I tend to find is people often focus on, say, like on Saturday, if you were going for your long run.
Yeah.
Everything is focused on Saturday. It's the 50K run. I must be better. But you forget that every single day you're also exercising.
Literally.
You've also got to fuel and refuel during that time.
Yeah.
So the basics are so important to me, like just eating on a daily basis needs to be better first. Mm-hmm. And then we can go into, okay, what are we going to start with the night before a longer run? I still think, and like the majority of literature is still showing, that putting in carbs the night before is still beneficial.
Yeah.
Because physiologically, while I'm exercising, my body is using carbohydrates stored as glycogen in like from my muscle and my liver to fuel my body.
Yeah.
So I'm basically, my petrol tank needs to be full by the time I start.
Yeah.
So you don't need to go overboard and eat like tons, because you also probably feel sick and heavy the next day. But it's a good idea probably the night before to have something that contains carb, whether it's potato, rice, a bit of pasta, something like that with your meal. And then the morning of your exercise, also basically, because during the night your petrol tank might have been full, but now during the night it is going down a bit because your body's still breathing, like keeping you alive during the night. So in the morning, the idea is just to top that up again. So, I mean, people like oats with peanut butter, toast, Future Life. You've really got to figure out what works for you specifically. And then the important thing is that you are refueling while you are exercising. And that's where the practice really comes in, because like from my personal experience, I do not tolerate gels and goos very well. I prefer to eat bars or actual food, like a hot crisp bun or something that's like more substantial for me, and a mix of sweet, savory. But you need to be fueling throughout it.
Why is it so important to fuel throughout?
Well, like if you start off with a full tank, your body, if I can just generalize, probably has enough available for about an hour of exercise to an hour and a half, depending on intensity. If you're going full tilt for an hour,
yeah,
you'll empty that tank quite quickly. Whereas if you're doing something that's slower, more steady, but for an hour and a half, you could probably go. So
yeah,
if I'm doing anything over that, mm-hmm, I'm emptying my petrol tank.
Mm-hmm.
My car will not drive if I don't have petrol in. So my body is the same. If I am emptying that tank, I'm going to feel terrible. You're going to feel like you've hit a wall and you literally cannot take a step further.
Yeah.
The thing there, when you get to that point, no amount of Coca-Cola, bar one, sweets, gummies, anything like that is actually going to get you to the end. It's going to be awful. And that's what we're trying to prevent, because you don't want that awful experience and it puts people off. But it also means that recovery time now is going to take so much longer, because to fill that tank is a long, like, it takes much longer.
Yeah.
I was actually speaking to friends yesterday who they're training for Ironman, and I had breakfast with them and they had long training on Saturday and she actually didn't hydrate or eat enough. And she eventually got to that point where she was just like, couldn't, she just could not see how she could go further. And
sure,
the next day she had to go for her long run.
Oh, no.
And what they've also been doing is, I think there's a huge like hype about protein shakes, protein, which yes, protein is very important, that your meal is balanced with protein, but doesn't help after exercise to take a protein shake, because typically a protein shake only has protein. It doesn't have the carbs and the fats.
Yeah.
So I have just used all of my carbohydrates in my body, and now I'm taking a protein shake.
Yeah.
That's not doing anything for you. Typically, those protein shakes are also super low in calories. Yeah. It's like 100 calories.
Yes.
I've just burnt 500 to 1,000 calories. Putting in 100 calories in of protein is not going to help my recovery. Mm. So you can see in any shop that you go to, if there's a protein shake versus a recovery shake, a recovery shake has the optimal ratio of carb to protein.
Mm.
It's got 3 carbs to 1 protein.
Sure.
So that's what you should be taking.
Instead of having
a recovery shake after a protein shake. Has its place elsewhere, but not for immediately after to recover, because you're actually not doing anything for yourself.
Sure. That's like a solid point. I think we all, it's because we get preached like protein shake all the time. Mm. But when you've now explained the place of carbs, fat, so a recovery shake is probably a better option. And how important is it also to have a good rehydration strategy in terms of knowing when to refuel water versus electrolytes in the body, especially for people that sweat a lot and you're losing sodium?
Yeah, that's such a good question, because it's very individualized. So, I mean, a general rule just on like in daily life is for every 10 kilos that you weigh, you should be drinking 250 mils of water just to live.
Yeah.
So if someone weighs 60,
that's
1.5 liters just on a daily basis. If you are exercising and sweating, you still need to replace what you're sweating out. And I think that's something so easy that people can change today. It doesn't cost you anything, because you can drink our tap water here mostly.
Exactly.
But yeah, just the water is important to start early on, start your day with water and be consistent with that. And I think the electrolytes and things, if you sweat a lot, are so important. But it's actually a bit more complicated than that, because certain people have higher sweat rates.
Yes.
And if you do have higher sweat rates, you're obviously losing a heck of a lot more sodium. But the best way that you can find out like what your sodium losses are is actually you can go for a sweat test.
Yes.
They are a bit more pricey, but if you are one that struggles with now, you're cramping a lot, you're never recovering properly, you just feel terrible the whole time. And like a good sign is when, you know, you finish exercise and you see the actual like sweat, white sweat
marks. Yes, yes.
Those kind of people, I would honestly recommend doing something like a sweat test, because I think then knowing for you, how much of my electrolyte do I need to take? And there's certain companies that have different sodium levels in different electrolytes. So you get ones that might have like 1,500 milligrams, 1,000, 2,000. So that would be I think, quite an individualized thing.
Yeah.
A general rule would more be like, now we're getting into summer again when it is hotter. So if you are doing longer things, I would always recommend like the day before and as soon as you finished exercising, take a rehydrate type of thing and electrolyte and replace
the
definitely.
Lost. Yeah. And talk us through your journey with running Comrades. When did you do your first Comrades? What was it like? What was the experience like?
Last year was my first Comrades, and then I did my back-to-back this year.
Yeah.
That was just to tick the back-to-back. Now they're saying that next year's an up.
It's the up route.
So now I've only done two down, so now I'm like, must I do the up because I haven't done an up?
Yeah.
I will in my life would love to do 10 or 11 and get like the green number, but last year was my first one, and I did it with one of my best friends, and we ran every step of the way together, and it was honestly one of the best days of my life.
Wow.
Besides our wedding, I must say.
At least that's it. Yeah.
But it was so awesome. Just,
wow.
It's probably one of the best experiences that you can have.
Yeah.
I think if someone runs, if they could potentially do that in their life, I'm always like, think about it.
Yeah.
Because it is great.
Yeah.
Just being there on the start line with thousands and thousands of South Africans and people from all over the world as well. But I think it's just such a humbling thing.
Mm.
And what I love about running, and a lot of runners will say this, is it just like everyone's the same.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter where you're from, how much training you've done, it will literally make everyone the same, which I just love.
Yeah.
And it's just honestly surreal seeing the amount of people that I'll get emotional seeing the amount of people that come out to support you. It's
because you're like, I'm here, I signed up for this, why? Like, and it makes you feel
the goodness of their hearts are coming out and giving you a Mari biscuit or a potato, like they've made that stuff for you to make your life easier. It really is just unbelievable. It's very hard. It was hard, but I think if you can find someone to run with it that's completely on the same page of you as just wanting to enjoy the experience and not actually care about whether you take 10 hours or 11 hours or 8 hours, just enjoying the atmosphere. Mm. I think that's what that race is about, in my opinion. And this year we went in with the same mindset, so we loved it again. Yeah, it was just wonderful, and I want to keep doing them in my life.
Yes.
Or like in a row, but just
continuously.
Yeah, continue, because it really is addictive once you've done it.
And what's the mental tape that plays in your head when you get to the point where you hit the wall during a Comrades? How do you then pick yourself up and give yourself the energy to finish the race?
I think you really do feed off the people around you, because everyone is struggling at some point.
Yeah.
And you might see someone struggling and you sort of encourage them and they're like, thank you so much.
Yeah.
And then at some point you are like, oh my gosh, we still have like 40 Ks to run.
Yeah.
I think the person I ran with, just you go through highs and lows at different points and you know you will suffer at some point. But somehow you just know, like at the next point you're going to see your husband or your mom or someone, you like live for those moments of where you know they are going to be friends.
Yeah.
And that just gives you so much energy
and
they send you on your way again. And say, okay, we'll see you in a little bit. And you just live for those like 20 Ks between there.
Yeah.
It is very hard to fuel for that. Like I know exactly what I should be doing.
Yeah.
But it's very hard to actually get it right.
Yeah.
Because you feel like you need to be eating all the time, but you go through phase of being nauseous and then you want something salty, but that's not always available. So you kind of just take whatever you can get and hope that that works.
Yeah. No, I must say I really am inspired by anyone that finishes Comrades. I think it's a goal for me, maybe in the near 5-year period, but not now because I can feel that I'm not ready. If I had to almost like, what is it, put two parallels together, running a Comrades and starting your own practice, would you say there are some similarities? What's like your journey been like? Because one could, well, you are actually an entrepreneur. So what was it like for you starting your own practice, your own business? What are some of the challenges that you didn't anticipate?
I think, you could probably compare them, and it is a bit of an endurance event and very daunting at the start. And I think, like, when I first wanted to go on my own, you your own like worst enemy and think like, no ways, I can't do this. Like, I can't go by myself. Like,
yeah.
No one would come to me. No one would listen to what I have to say.
Yeah.
So it's the same as comrades. Yeah. There's no ways I could do this. Like, that is just way too far, way too hectic. Other people do this.
Yeah.
So I think that like self-doubt does creep in. And I think even if you do have a successful business, there are times when you still go through moments of thinking, what have I done?
Yeah.
Why have I signed up for this?
Yeah.
But I think that, again, the people around you are what like help you and say, no, you can do it. You will be fine. You know what you're doing. You know what you're talking about. And they also give you the advice of what's the best way to do it, what could be better. Yeah, I don't know. It does go through phases, like everyone. There's month ends or there's summers versus winters. And I think we've been lucky that we've had a consistent stream of business.
Yeah.
But not many people in winter want to see a dietitian.
That's sometimes true.
Gets a bit quieter. And now it's starting to get spring and it's again flat panic. Now people want to get ready for summer.
Yes.
But we're trying to encourage people to the whole year again be consistent. Why do we need to wait for a New Year's resolution?
Exactly.
So there are challenges, I think. I'm just trying to think of all the...
No, but I think it's a good answer because some people, and even myself, my own journey, are looking to branch out into something new and they're not sure if they have the confidence or the willpower to do it. Can they do it alone? And most people don't necessarily know when to take the leap. And I think that's where...
The hardest part. Yeah. Like, no, not now. I'm not ready. But honestly, there's never going to be a time when you're going to be 100% ready. I just think if there is a gap, almost just trust your gut and just go with it.
Yeah.
There will always be the challenges of like the admin side of things. Like, I do not like the admin side of things and doing that, but you can also outsource.
That's
which
true.
Which is wonderful.
Yeah.
And that's what we have done. And that's been a huge help.
Yeah.
Just do it.
Yeah. Go for it.
Go for it. Trust your gut.
And you touched on something, which is a thing that we all do about like panicking when it's summertime. So maybe there are people right now that are like, I need to lose weight. I want to get my summer body. I want to have a six pack before December comes so I can feel confident on the beach. How should we approach it? If I, throughout the year, haven't been taking care of my diet or haven't been eating correctly and now I'm panicking, maybe I've got a wedding or I'm going to Mauritius for December, what can I do at this point?
I think you just need to start and not, number one, freak out.
Yeah.
Biggest thing is probably speak to someone that is professional and can help you and guide you, because my worst is when people feel like this panic and then they start doing extreme things like cutting things out or calorie tracking obsessively, because it all ends up like not being sustainable and compromising something else in your life.
Why is calorie tracking bad? Like,
It's not bad because there is science to that, because you do need to be aware of what I'm putting in and what's going out.
Yeah.
Like the input output equation of what my body is burning and what I'm taking in calorie wise. But it can become very obsessive. And if you have an app that you are tracking calories with, you end up not even listening to whether I'm hungry or if I'm full, because all I'm thinking about whether this fits my calorie budget or not. And you might have reached your calorie budget for the day, but I'm at 6 o'clock and by 7, 8, I'm actually genuinely hungry.
Yeah.
But now I'm freaking out because of my budget. And like, it's just that becomes a toxic thing. You also stop thinking about what I'm actually eating. Like the fact that I actually need, again, carbohydrates, proteins, and fats.
Yeah.
Because now all I care about is that the peanut butter has a lot of calories in, so I can't eat it.
Yeah.
Because that's going to throw my calories out.
But
you need the peanut butter because it's a healthy fat and it's forming part of a balanced meal.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult if someone gets in that cycle to then undo that, of them actually learning to trust their body and that my body can metabolize and needs XYZ, because all you are thinking about, I can't eat that because that's too high in calories and you're not seeing the food for its worth.
Mm.
You could drink a bottle of wine and eat some knickknacks and that's your calorie budget. That's not really good for you.
Yeah. And actually, speaking on calorie, because even with weight loss, like a lot of people are trying to lose weight, but don't necessarily understand that the number on the scale is not an accurate depiction. So you could actually be exercising, eating healthy, and not necessarily dropping weight on the scale, but you're losing centimeters. Can you talk us through that? Because I think so many people are fixated on what the number is on the scale.
I see it still every day. People getting on the scale, and you've done it with me. We've got on the body composition machine, which just gives you a little bit more information. It can actually show you like what water weight is like, what your muscle mass is like, fat mass, fat percentage, visceral fat, which is the belly fat that we really always want to target, and we want that to be healthy. Muscle weighs more than fat. So you can be doing your CrossFit, you can be exercising a lot more, lifting heavier weights. Your weight on the scale might actually go up. It might stay the same. And then you've actually, if you look at the composition of it, you've actually gone up on muscle and lost fat, which is exactly what we would want. Because a healthy body composition is one that has less fat percentage. Not unhealthily low fat percentage, because we still need fat because it's protective. But if you are just fixating on a scale, you are going to get very frustrated, because things like being premenstrual, things like drinking alcohol, having a sleepless night, a very stressful day, all of that can actually increase the number on the scale, because there might be inflammation or water retention. So it's just, again, becomes an unhealthy obsession. Chasing an unrealistic number rather than trying to improve a body composition.
And I think the other day I was actually watching one of your reels on Instagram. We'll actually share your Instagram handle so people can see, because you guys do amazing content. The buzzword is around like gut health, but not a lot of us know what that is, or like if I'm constantly bloated, what could that potentially mean? What is good gut health, and what is gut health, and why should we care about it?
So it's a huge thing now, and I think you're right, like a but like it's been around for ages, but now people, I think, especially after COVID, I feel like people are really trying to focus more on their health, because there's so many like things that have maybe been brought to light they didn't know they had. So when we refer to gut health, we talk about like our gut as running from the top all the way down to the bottom, like your esophagus, stomach, intestines, colon, all of that. And it's kind of like its own ecosystem. It's amazing. It is filled with trillions of microorganisms, which are the good guys, our probiotics. That sort of live in our gut. And more than 95% of our serotonin, which is your hormone that controls mood, anxiety, depression, more than 95% of that is produced in our gut. So what we eat is either fueling probiotics or not. And if we aren't looking after that whole gut microbiome and nourishing it, it almost ends up that our serotonin then isn't thriving. So then we're getting this cycle of anxiety, depression, stress, which generally not many of us want to eat lettuce and tomato and cucumber when we're feeling anxious or stressed.
We want to grab the chocolate.
To the chockies or the treats,
which
is more the refined things and processed things. And that's not what our gut wants. Probiotics want fiber, vegetables, fruit, lean proteins. So it almost then becomes this vicious cycle. I'm not feeling great, so I reward myself with less healthy food, but then I'm not feeding my gut. So serotonin goes down, so then I end up feeling more stress again. So there's that aspect of it, the whole like mood and anxiety and stress side of things, which I think in our like environment here where everything's like a rat race and go, 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 everyone's stress is at 10 out of 10. It's so important. And then also a lot of our immune function, like I think the number is around 80% of immune function is also coming from our gut. So really, if we can try like 80% of the time, try and nourish ourselves, eat more veggies, eat lean proteins, eat whole grains, because that's what your body wants. You will almost be rewarded by that, and your body will start feeling better and lighter and less puffy and less swollen and inflamed. So yeah, gut health really is important. It's not that you're not allowed eating the sweets or chocolates, but if that's what you are resorting to and relying on, you're never going to end up feeling healthy or having regular gut function.
Yeah.
And sorry, it is really important. Your gut tells you a lot.
Yeah.
If you're constipated, if you have diarrhea, if you're bloating, something is not working right. That is how your body is like manifesting and being like, I'm lacking something, or I'm not coping, or there is a bit too much stress.
Yeah.
So I think people take for granted when they have gut function that actually works really well.
Yes, yes. Because we think our body is a problem, but it's actually warning signs that something is out of order.
Yeah.
It's like if you constantly constipated, then you might think, or like I've been eating too much bread this week, and you don't actually sit down to actually understand your body better.
Yeah, I think that's, again, diet culture that's told us like bread equals the problem.
Yes, like, yes.
It might be that you're not getting enough fiber in your diet, which then you would need bread, but maybe the quality of the bread is the problem and that it's not well balanced.
Yeah.
But not many of us think, I'm bloated, maybe my stress levels are 14 out of 10 today.
Yeah.
We immediately think, must be the gluten.
Yes,
must
gluten
be
and
the,
wheat.
This, like, yes, there could be that aspect.
Yeah.
If it's like a more refined option, then it could be that. But generally, it's more holistic, or there's more to it than just something so simple.
Yeah. And on supplementation wise, what should we be supplementing? I think we spoke earlier about protein, but I always used to fall in the trap that I needed a protein powder. Whereas if you actually check that you're getting enough protein portions throughout the day, you might not necessarily need to supplement. Are there supplements that we should be taking? Like, I know for athletes, like magnesium is important. What should we be supplementing with?
So that's very like individualized as well. And I think what I would do in an initial consult is first go through like, what are you currently taking? What is the medical history? Like, do you have cholesterol problems? Are you low on iron? Have you ever tested your vitamin D? Mm-hmm. Those things I like to first go through and see that with what you're currently eating.
Yeah.
Plus potentially blood tests if we need, like to check vitamin D, B12, cholesterol, iron. Those things are all important because I like first seeing if there is a problem.
Yes.
Then we'll supplement it.
Okay.
But if there isn't deficiencies, you don't necessarily have to supplement. We'd first try and fix dietary things, make your meals more balanced, check the bloods. If everything's fine there, then let's continue.
But
obviously, if you are deficient, like quite low in vitamin D, then there's a need to supplement.
Yeah.
But again, that's sort of coming with the empowering and the education that like, if you know from your blood test your vitamin D is super low, you're more likely to take the vitamin D.
Makes
than
sense.
Me just being like, Zinclair, you need to take vitamin D, C, zinc, this. Like, there's 45 pills to take.
Yeah.
You're not likely going to be consistent with that.
Yeah.
So a bit hard to say like these are the ones that we should be taking. I think food needs to come first and you need to eat balanced meals throughout the day consistently.
Yeah.
Coupled with potentially doing certain bloods to make sure that you aren't deficient in certain areas, and then you supplement from there.
Okay. No, I love that advice because also I think we all think like we could self-medicate ourselves. So like people are taking multivitamin, magnesium, and you might actually be supplementing where there's no need to supplement. So in this case, it probably is better to consult with a dietitian or a medical practitioner just so that you can see whether there are deficiencies.
Definitely.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier you're working with the Lions Rugby Club, right?
Yes.
What's that like and what is your role with them?
So I am their dietitian.
Yes.
And I actually go there on Mondays. Every Monday I'm at Ellis Park and Joburg Stadium. I go there and I'm there between 10 and 12.
Uh-huh.
And mostly what I do for them is their body compositions and like probably like maybe once a quarter we do like a presentation just like re-educating on like what they should be eating on a daily basis, how they should be fueling and being available. there to see individuals and do their body compositions. Mm-hmm. Also, they spend a lot of time touring, yes, going overseas when they have tournaments. So what I also get involved in is setting up the menus for the hotels. Mm. So making sure that the right types of breakfasts are available.
Yeah.
Lunch meals are balanced.
Yeah.
And dinner meals are balanced.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm there and they've known me for 2 years now. I've been with them for 2 years. So they also are a lot more comfortable with me and come and approach me and say, like, I'm stuck with this and this.
Yeah.
So it's just really nice because I love sports.
Yes.
So it's a nice.
Are you a rugby fan?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you support the Lions? Are you allowed to say?
I'm from the Cape. So I'm still like a province girl at heart, but now I love them as well. But conflicting when they play each other. Shouting for my boys.
You're like,
So my dad used to be a rugby player, so I think and my grandpa and family, so I think I've like grown up in that.
Yeah.
But I've got two big brothers, so I've also just like must play sport. So yeah, I just love that because it is completely different to what I see in my practice.
Yeah.
Because I'm seeing like runners and triathletes and CrossFitters and a lot of general weight loss.
Yes.
That is the complete opposite there. I'm trying to like just get enough food into these guys.
Sure. Because they're probably losing a lot of calories.
Yeah, because they're big and starting to have so much muscle.
Yeah.
They're just using so many calories the whole time. And a lot of them just aren't actually eating enough.
My goodness.
Because there's not enough time in a day. Also, they're sometimes lazy.
Yeah.
So trying to get enough food in is, it's quite like refreshing to work with something different. And I just like the change of scenery. So I'm not like full time there. I'm not there all the time every single day. It's once a week and available when they need.
Yeah.
And for certain, like tours or things. They also get a meal company to bring them lunches. So I was sort of involved in making sure that what they were providing was healthy to refuel them.
Yeah, makes sense. I think also you touched on an important point with traveling. Like if there are other people in similar, like if they're professional athletes or people who are busy traveling, how do you maintain a good diet regardless of where you're going? You spoke about like ensuring that in hotels or wherever the players are staying, that there's sufficient, let me say, healthy quality breakfast available.
Yeah. That I think you and I worked on so well because you were traveling all over in Cape Town and just never in one space.
Yeah.
But that's why I think the education is so important, is a diet's never going to be sustainable if you told what you must eat on Monday and then for lunch and for supper, because you're just being good at following instructions. Mm-hmm. And then people think, oh, I have no willpower, I can't stick to this. But it's unrealistic expectations to stick to. If I've taught you what needs to be on a plate, like there needs to be carb, there needs to be protein, you can add a fat, there needs to be veg. Mm-hmm. I can stand at the hotel's buffet breakfast and make a good health choice because I know I need protein. So what am I going to have? Am I going to have poached eggs? Am I going to have boiled eggs? Am I going to choose the yogurt option?
Yeah.
That's my protein. Now I need a carb. Yeah. So am I going to have the whole wheat bread? Am I going to have the all bran flakes? Mm-hmm. Am I going to have the baby potatoes? Are there veggies available?
Yeah.
Do they have tomatoes, mushrooms, like that kind of thing?
Yeah.
If I know that, it doesn't matter if I am here or in Italy or in Cape Town. I know what needs to be on my plate and I can try and make the best choice. Even if it's not like at a hotel where there's food ready for you. If you are landing at an airport and you are stopping, there's a Woolworths at the airport. Like, I can try and make a good choice there. Like, let me get a little yogurt with a fruit pot and a little sachet of muesli.
Exactly.
Or, you know, like if you know what needs to be there, you can actually make it work.
Yeah.
But that's why you've got to be taught what needs to be on your plate so you can feel empowered and confident in yourself to make a good choice standing in the aisle.
So, Rosie, you recently got married last year, right?
Was it this year?
Okay. Yeah. I remember seeing the post. You looked absolutely beautiful. Congratulations. I want to know, like, how are you managing with everything? You're now a wife, you own a business, you're an entrepreneur, and I consider you to be an athlete as well. How do you manage all these roles and still create time for yourself?
It is quite hard, but I think my whole life, I feel like I've been in like sports, and at school, I think it's sort of like laid that foundation for me of like going from like morning swimming to school to after school activities, late night hockey. So I feel like I'm used to it to an extent that it hasn't all of a sudden gone from nothing to changing.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm a bit of a nerd, if I'm allowed to say nerd, yes. That like my husband probably laughs at me because every Sunday I do the same thing. I take out my piece of paper and I write like, what is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah.
And I just like, I'm a, like writing things out. If I have it on my phone, I feel like I don't see it. And I think once I've written it,
yeah,
I know it's in my brain. I know what's happening this week. But like having a structure and knowing like on Monday morning, I'm with Sinclair, then I'm going to the Lions, then I'm at work, then I'm training. Tuesday morning, I'm doing the, like, I think seeing it like that helps me.
Yeah.
And I, on that piece of paper, which I might lose and rewrite again, I also write out like what meals I'm going to have. So my training is in there. What work I need to do is in there. And then the meals for the week.
Yeah.
Because I don't like food prepping, like spending a Sunday cooking the same meal.
Yes, you're so
that
bored.
Is like negative connotation. So I'll write like tonight we're having rice paper rolls. On Tuesday we're making stir fry. On Wednesday we're out for dinner, so don't need to cook. On Thursday let's make a pasta.
Yeah.
And just like writing it out so that when I do grocery shoppings, I'm not standing in the aisle not knowing what the heck to buy.
Yeah.
I know these are the four meals I need to make sure we've got, chucking that in there. And that sort of helps me that like I like cooking, but at the end of every day, if I have to think about what are we eating for dinner, who's going to do the groceries, like that's what I don't like. So if I've just written it out once, I feel like I've got a handle on the week. Things might change, but that provides structure for me. And I think I just need the structure and it laid out once so that it doesn't feel like all over and I can't cope. Seeing it on the paper helps me.
That's some solid advice. Like, and you, I guess you feel more in control of the week.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And it might change by tomorrow. They didn't have the groceries that I wanted, but it's okay.
It's not a rigid plan.
Yeah. At least I've like got a framework, I suppose. And doing it weekly sort of just helps me feel like I, exactly like you said, I do have some sort of control over what potentially could happen this week.
Yeah. And how do you make time for friends, community, family, people that you train with? Yeah.
So I think a lot of my friends also train. So I have like-minded friends and I know I can kill two birds with one stone there. And like, let's go run together
and catch up.
Yeah. Or let's go ride a bike together and catch up like that. But yo, I find it hard in the week, to do things. I like want to go to bed at 8 because I'm up early. So like social things in the week, if I can avoid them, I try to.
Yeah.
And then I'll rather do things on the weekend, even if it's like going with a friend and who's got a baby and like, let's go walk in the park with a coffee. Like,
That's
how I try and fit the social things in. So I'm also filling my cup by being outdoors and seeing the friend. My top three things that I want to leave you all with is, Zintle and I've spoken a lot, but number one would be to not overcomplicate things. It's actually quite simple nutrition, is that you should be eating your three food groups of carbohydrates, proteins, and fats. It is the most sustainable way that you can do things. So that ties into my second point of looking at things in a sustainable way and what you could do for the next 30 years of your life. And that doesn't just come from a dietary point of view. I'm talking about moving your body in a way that is sustainable for you. If you hate running, please don't go and run. You can go to the gym, you can go walk, you can go and swim. So when it comes to exercise, think about sustainability, managing your stress, sleeping enough, and then from a dietary point of view, doing something that is sustainable, which does not involve cutting out any food groups. And the third point is on that sort of tying into sustainability with food and not cutting things out. If you have a better balance of 80% of the time eating things that are a bit better for you, healthier for you, then it's okay if 20% of the time you did have the foods that are maybe like sweets or chocolates that, yes, aren't necessarily great for your health, but they do form a part of your life. Because if you're cutting all of those out, inevitably the over-restricting is going to lead to binging. And then we're starting this vicious cycle of restrict, binge, being hard on yourself. So yeah, those are my top three tips, and I hope you learned something today.
Yeah. That's brilliant. Mm. Thank you so much for your time. This has really been
so nice.
Awesome.
So nice seeing you again.
Yeah, and catching up. Yeah. It's like new chapters altogether.
And that's it for our 8th episode. Thank you for being a part of this community. And if this conversation has touched you or helped you in any way, consider sharing it with a friend, colleague, or even a family member. You can also support the show by subscribing to the podcast and giving us a rating on your podcast platform or even our YouTube channel. Remember, if you're looking for a place to debrief about episode 8 with Rosie, follow our social media pages, Navigating the Twinnies, on LinkedIn, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and Facebook. Remember that the next LinkedIn and Substack newsletter will be out today, which is the 6th of December. This has been Navigating the Twinnies. We will be back with more in 2 weeks' time on the 20th of December.